Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Now's the time for us to, you've hopefully been gathering up your questions. We have roving mics around the room. When you do pop up your hand, please stand and inform us your name and organisation before you ask the question. And also for those joining us from the live link, of course, come on, get tapping away and getting your questions in. I'm waiting for those pieces of paper to come through so that I can link you up and really engage you with the conference as well. So without further ado, let's open up for some questions, please.
Wayne Allsop from Leicester City Council. It's a question for Mike and Jeff. Myself, I'm less convinced that the ministerial departments are communicating with each other in terms of how the money's parachuting its way down to a local level. My question's in reference to the score games and obviously the commitment just recently by DCMS to sustain the score games organisers' roles until 2015. Obviously, what Department for Education have suggested through Mr Gove is that he's going to be withdrawing the money for the teacher release post in 2013. How can the score games survive, obviously, without that valuable resource?
Shall I kick off first there? First of all, I think it really is great that we've been able to extend the school games organiser funding from 2 years to 4 years. That's actually through money from the Department of Health and Sport England. Hopefully it shows our commitment to that. I think there is a good dialogue, but I think we also have to be realistic that there is a different approach in education to the last administration. It is very much for schools to use their own resources, and if Michael Gove was here, and you know, I'm not arguing for him, I work for Sport England, he would argue schools have the resources to do that. I guess some of that can be shown by the number of school sport partnerships which are still there. I spent 6 years of my life helping with the Youth Sport Trust to build that network. So I'm the last person who wanted to see any cuts. I would just say, government had to make some really tough choices, and sport has had to take some of those cuts. We've seen that on the community side as well. I guess my plea would be is that we just use the resource we do have and make it go as far as possible.
Anything to add on that, Jeff?
Well, no, all I would say from my department's point of view, I'm aware that there have been very, very few financial commitments made as far ahead as March 15. In fact, I think it's the only one in my entire department. So, we feel we're playing as much of a role as we can. And I do agree with Mike. It's about making the most of what we've got. I think the relationships are pretty close, but we've got to recognise that departments have their own agendas and we'll prioritise things accordingly. I mean, unfortunately, we've got a nice join-up going, we've got a good programme.
Okay, I mean, Jeff, just to follow up on that line, obviously the announcements this week about public health funding, public health coming home to local government, hopefully bringing that sort of holistic approach much more together. I think just with regards to this agenda, how it's this networking you're talking about is really, really useful. It's just how we might be able to strengthen that case and champion the sport physical activity agenda within that long list of priorities that public health directors are going to be facing locally. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about how we take that forward, you know, how we can deal with that locally, what we can use to make that case.
Well, I mean, I think that there are a number of arguments for it. As I say, you know, the broader physical activity case, it strikes me as actually quite a strong one because it helps so many agendas. You know, it's not just good for health, but, I mean, certainly we've been pushing the active travel area quite a lot in terms of helping transport, in terms of helping the environment and so on. So it's about making the case locally. Within the public health outcomes framework, there is an indicator on physical activity, which we're very pleased to see. We do actually now have a national ambition for physical activity as well. It's one of only five. So there are some sort of very key signs that this is a high priority area. As I say, it has got a lot of priority from ministers. One of the biggest public health things that we're doing at the moment is the responsibility deal. We're active in four areas, and physical activity is one of them. So I think we're trying to give off all the signals that this is indeed a very high priority with a lot of benefits, and it's about using the kind of business case argument that actually it's a very, very good win.
Mike.
Can I just build on that? And it is about making the business case. There's three things which we're doing, real practical things we're doing at Sport England to help make that business case. We're doing a piece of research to really demonstrate how sport, and I do mean sport, not just traditional sport, but going to the gyms, running, all of those sorts of things, can get inactive people from being inactive into sport. So prove that once and for all, looking across all of the other research. And we're bringing that together and we'll publish that very shortly. We're also creating a... I'm going to get the technical health terms wrong here, but a tool which will help you cost a sports activity and show that it's a really cheap intervention. So when you present it to a wellbeing board or to a GP or somebody like that, actually they can look across the NICE costing system, and sport is a cheap option. We will also, and you probably wouldn't have seen it on the slide, there's 5 million to pilot actually working and supporting with the health sector to test out how we can do that. All of that can help us build the business case. But I really do think that it's about building that business case at a local level. That's where the funding is coming down to.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Some more questions at the front here.
Yeah, I'm Andrew Anastasiou from Child UK. I think I wrote about 6 or 7 questions I could have asked you about what's going on. But the particular one I'm interested in now is, it's about the capacity to deliver. You know, there's a lot of money going in. My experience of the previous sports plan was that there just wasn't the capacity of high-quality staff to deliver. And I think a lot of young people get put off because when they engage with sport, the actual delivery and the quality of delivery is just not good enough to compete with your computer game, because you're competing with Sony and all the marketing that goes on with that. And actually, we've got to really upskill the people. I mean, we know for a fact that in this country, even in football, which is our biggest, you know, one of our biggest sports, we are so far behind Europe in the number of qualified coaches that we have per young person involved. So how is what you're proposing going to change that?
Something, Mike.
I think that's a game for me. Capacity and workforce I totally agree with what you're saying there. A big theme of what Whole Sport Plans will be about is getting more volunteers trained, more coaches paid and volunteered into the system. Our Sports Makers programme is training 40,000 volunteers alone as a stepping stone, often into coaching. I think we've also, this is where we've got to make links into the fantastic work School Sport Partnerships did. I know there's a number of PDMs in the room today. How many youngsters did you put through Step Into Sport or other leadership or coaching programmes? They will all be 18, 19, 20 now. Those are the people we really have got to capture through the FE investment, through the HE investment we're making, and get them out into the community. Doorstep Clubs, which is focused on the deprived areas, that has as a stream how you can take local people, give them high quality coaching skills, but then deploy them on their own areas. So capacity is an issue. I think we've got some good ideas, but it's always going to be an issue.
I think there's some practical issues here, because you put a lot of money into national governing bodies, and that national governing body is concentrated on that particular sport. And actually, for the community, it's not one sport, because in each place and each different place that you have young people, they will want different things. So it's not about the national governing body deciding they're going to put football or cricket or something. It's about having coaches that have the capability to teach more than one sport, and not having to go through the rigmarole of having to do very similar programs of coaching, then go through all the CRB process and the volunteering checks. And I think there's some very practical things that also need to be looked at to make it easier for people to be able to teach and deliver high quality sport in the community, because I think that's a big barrier that still hasn't quite been addressed yet.
Again, agree with what you're saying. There is balance. less than half of the money is going to national governing bodies. More money is going locally. I talked about the multi-sport approach. The satellite clubs will be multi-sport. The doorstep clubs will be multi-sport. I absolutely agree if we can make CRB passporting and things like that work. It's something we've been lobbying for really hard. I think we're being listened to, but we aren't quite there. We also need to make coaching and the qualifications more generic. That's something which we're working with sports, but also Skills Active.
Yeah, I think that's really quite valid points that you're raising, and you know, essentially it will boil down to us as local leaders stepping up and trying to make that happen. I think I'm hearing sort of round the back door around, you know, the coming together of NGBs, creating a little bit more capacity. I'm hearing that we need to make that real. I think the point that you raised though is really good, because it's the quality of coaching, and I think what we're dealing with a number of young people is actually also the quality of just engagement, you know, and there's different skills there, aren't there, that are involved rather than just the pure sporting.
I say that because we do the engagement as well. We work with a lot of, our target group is 11 to 19, so our engagement is the first thing that we do, and then the quality of the coaching is the second. So it's an assumed thing that we do, but yes, it's absolutely vital that the engagement is correct. Yeah. And that we produce our own role models within the community that young people can look up to and aspire to in the long term.
Thanks for raising that point. There was a gentleman just behind there, and then one at the back.
I'm Steve Williams from Watford Football Clubs Trust. It follows on very nicely, actually, from the question that the gentleman's just asked. It's around community. Mike, you mentioned community clubs. Are they registered community clubs, or like the gentleman's kind of mentioned before, registered charities? Now, you know, we provide many sports, not just football, and I'm sure this could be said for any sport that's, you know, present today or listening, and that is that we provide football, badminton, table tennis, you know, you name it, it's virtually there. We've got qualified coaches. I'll just take one program, the Kicks program. You know, we take people from deprived areas. We give them lots of physical activity during the day, during half terms, school breaks, evenings. Are those numbers counted? The volunteers that we bring in to actually then become the next coaches, are they counted? You know, in terms of working with our local authorities, we work across Hertfordshire, Harrow and Hillingdon. Harrow particularly are talking about commissioning coming in 2013/14. Therefore, how will we be able to kind of get in-kind payments from schools to access facilities that we want to take those programs out to? But at the moment, you know, with funding so tight out there, actually, rather than receiving cash, it would be nice actually if we didn't have to pay for the facilities, or not so much, to be able to continue those programs.
I think that's me again. I think there were three points there. Let me try and deal with those quickly. In terms of clubs, we really do mean the broader sense of clubs. So it isn't just charter standard football clubs. It will be a really broad range of clubs, to very community focused up to your traditional sports club. I think all of them have a role to play. I said very much that this is an area where we want to work up our plans. We want to talk to people about how best to do that. So there will be further consultation. I'd really encourage you to be part of that. In terms of counting, I think there was something there. At the moment, active people just counts 16 and above. It does look at participation levels. It also looks at volunteering. It also looks at how many coaching hours those people have had. So it does give that broad range. In moving down to 14, we need to maintain that sort of balance, because those elements are all quite important. Below that, there is a DCMS survey taking part, which also collects some similar data. But what it doesn't do is bring that data down to a local level. So counting and recognising fully what is going on. KICS is a great project, really well aware of it. We will want to talk to the Premier League and football about how that can complement work with you in terms of putting the satellite clubs down on the ground. In terms of school access, absolutely, that's why we want to work with the sector, not just with individual governors and head teachers, but you know, a huge number of our schools are becoming academies. There's, I think, three or four biggish companies which are going to run those academies, not the educational bit, but the facility side. We need to get in and talk to them and build it into their business model. We can also do some targeted support to help them. We can show how opening up your facilities can be a win-win, and it doesn't have to cost and it doesn't have to be at a premium.
Thanks, Mike. Gentleman at the back.
Jamie Oxley, University College, Plymouth. I have a great concern, along with colleagues, with training undergraduate teachers, that most undergraduate primary courses deliver 8 hours of training to those teachers to deliver PE. I recognise, and while staff recognise, that the 14 to 19 sector is important, but are we not actually... actually building up a problem that's going to cause greater concern for these youngsters that are physically inactive, greater levels of obesity, when the teachers that are going into the profession are ill-trained and actually not capable of delivering high-quality PE. So many schools are actually not delivering an hour of PE a week in primary schools because the staff aren't qualified to deliver it. And I really feel that until the government and the departments get together and really tackle this issue, we're just building ourselves up a problem in future years.
Okay. I mean, we haven't got DfE here to respond to that, but I mean, Jeff, you hinted earlier about, you know, where lifestyle habits may begin, and obviously that, I think, that sort of runs in with your question. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'd just sort of like to add to that. I don't know a huge amount about this, but I do know that Youth Sport Trust and Bupa are doing some work on this very precise issue, because they're very aware of the difficulty, particularly in primary schools, of teaching PE properly. And they are doing some work. They're doing some piloting work at the moment. I don't know all the detail, but specifically to try to address this problem.
Okay, we haven't got too much that we can give you back in that, but again, I'd reflect that it's locally where some of these answers are going to be made, and we do need to challenge locally.
So I do think that's another thing that needs to be raised, and as I said, the points are made at the front earlier on about community clubs and inactivity, so I think that's something that needs to be looked at.
I mean, Mike, I just sort of talk about, obviously there's a lot of cross-departmental engagement going on. We spoke about that earlier. So in terms, there may be opportunities there, I guess, in terms of those engagements, because we do need to unravel messages that we give in the fragmented sort of school world now, and DfE need to be part of it.
I'm here representing Sport England. I'm not part of the government, not part of the Whitehall machine. I can assure you that every opportunity we have to raise issues like teacher training, particularly, I completely agree with what you're saying around initial teacher training for primary teachers. It's been a real issue. Certainly all of the time I was in education, actually working in that department, I tried to do something about it, but couldn't. We've just collectively got to carry on lobbying about it. I think it is helpful that PE after the review of the primary and secondary curriculum, PE will remain and actually be treated as a core subject, so alongside maths, science and English. That does mean we should also put pressure on Ofsted to report on it and say what's good. There is good practice in primary, but it's really patchy. Things like school sport partnerships and the teacher release, which is, I know, time limited, is helping, but we've got to carry on lobbying about it.
Thanks, Mike. Maybe we'll be able to sort of get some further debate on that in the workshop this afternoon. Gentlemen, one there, and then gentlemen at the front. Thank you.
Good morning. Mark Laurie from Berkshire County Sports Partnership. I've got a question for Paul, seeing as you've not been on the hook yet.
Come on, Paul.
We're very fortunate. We've got Eton Dorney on our doorstep, so obviously we've got the rowing and the flat water canoeing. Really keen, obviously, to see the amount of schools engagement that's going on around the Olympic sites. What do you think the potential ripple effect is, if you'll excuse the pun, for clubs? Because actually, from our point of view, lives are very much lived locally, and a lot of water-based clubs in particular are not too far from where people live, but they're not in a big regional centre like yours. So how do you think we use the kind of inspiration of somewhere like Lee Valley to have that effect on other local clubs?
Yeah, a good question. Thanks, Mark. In terms of clubs, as I mentioned, we do actually are going to operate quite a few Olympic facilities, and the overwhelming response from clubs wanting to gain access to those facilities is just incredible. It's a huge list. If I reference the Whitewater as an example, again, a number of clubs have come forward that they want to actually be based there, be host there. And what we're keen to do, and we've got this within our legacy plans, is that any club we do have as a host body, if you like, will be accredited to a certain level, will actually achieve certain criteria to be set within that usage agreement, and that is kind of links to community, schoolwork, outreach work. So that's a model we've used for other facilities, such as the Athletics Centre with Enfield and Haringey Athletics Club. So we hope there's kind of a real legacy approach to that, real long-term delivery for that club, supporting what we're doing and what the National Governing Body are doing. So hopefully we'll continue that and roll out to other facilities.
Thanks, Paul. Where's the gentleman down from?
Hi, Ian Knott from Leicestershire and Rutland Sport. I do agree with the gentleman at the back. I think our issues at 14 and 16 wouldn't be there or wouldn't be as great as if we got them earlier. So that's kind of one point. I must admit, I do welcome the strategy and certainly the support. My concern is around the capacity issue again, around the school club links. Our issue locally with school club links is the capacity of the clubs to come in and support the schools and for those guys not to jump through some of the hoops that they have to do. The setting up of a satellite club to help the young people would mean that those volunteers would become even more stretched, and that's really the concern. The biggest kind of impact locally throughout the years that we've had is the community sports coach scheme that was a great scheme that looked at professionalising coaches, multi-sport, multi-skills approach, and also looked at partner funding from, you know, local partners. And I think the flexibility locally to work on initiatives like that where we can start professionalising coaching and getting in the right people, not necessarily the right qualifications, would be something that would be welcomed.
Try and pick up on that. Undoubtedly, you know, the more which can happen to build physical literacy and things like that in primary really does help. What is interesting, though, actually, if you look at, we've been investing in 34 sports and other projects to create club links. What has actually been quite interesting, if you look what happens there, is that even where there has been a focus in primary, there is still a drop-off because the pathway hasn't been good, that you've sometimes had something early in key stage one, then nothing in key stage two, coming back at key stage three, nothing in four. So there is some evidence which, and that's why, and you, £1 billion is a lot of money, but we've got to, you know, when you spread it out, we've got to target it somewhere. The best evidence has is that if you're going to transition, focus 14, 15, 16, there'll be, you know, the starting point is 14. There'll be some sports, early specialisms, where we might need to go lower, certainly down to 11, where the case can be made that it will build. The other thing about kind of flexible capacity, we won't just put 4,000 clubs down on the ground in one go. That has to go across the lifetime of the strategy, so we can build capacity as we go. I definitely think building the workforce through health support plans and other ways, maybe using some of the local pot to help do that, some of the other resource which comes to county sports partnerships, sports makers, things like that will help as well.
There's a gentleman over here.
Graham Morgan, I'm a director of a company called Evolve, a social impact company. I particularly, when I present this afternoon, will be attacking that last issue. But a question for Paul. You work around the London, Essex, Hertfordshire areas with this fantastic legacy thing. Is there provision planned for residential backup to what you're doing so that schools and authorities from around the rest of the country could visit on an activity-based learning type approach?
Yeah, thanks for that. The answer is yes. Within the regional park itself, about 5-10 minute walk from the Lee Valley Whitewater Centre is a youth hostel association building, quite a flagship building. It's a unique facility. So schools do use that, and they stay, have an educational program with us, and actually at the end of it do some sort of paddle sport activity. If it's not on the courses, it could be on the flat water. But as an organisation, we're looking to increase that. We've actually, we have a par 3 golf course that's actually been converted, rightly or wrongly, from golf into exactly that, some accommodation. So that would be suitable for educational usage. It's also really on the back of the Olympics as well, and what that will bring in terms of people coming to visit us, really. So, yeah, we have looked at that, and we're working on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Were there any other questions out in the audience? I thought I did see a hand somewhere. I'll just take this gentleman first and then come back to you.
Hi, it's Alan Watkinson. I'm a partnership development manager in Hounslow. I actually agree with the gentleman from Plymouth. I am a trainer for the BUPA course. I think it's a fantastic initiative, but I think it's an absolute disgrace that the Department for Education are relying on private funding to challenge the issue of physical literacy. Primary school teachers are very ill-equipped, and the people that are coming on the courses are subject leaders and not necessarily the people that need to be on the courses. The model is a good one, and it's a sound one. What I want to know really is please can you lobby the Department for Education to get involved in this? And secondly, when the public health bill becomes reality and there's money in the local authorities for public health, is there an opportunity there for funding to support this at primary level?
Okay. I'm not sure. I mean,
Partially. Certainly, I do know DfE officials are aware of the BUPA work. I do know that, and that's linking into the work they're doing on the curriculum review and the PSHE review and so on and so forth. I mean, in terms of, you know, how public health money is used, I mean, those will be local decisions and to be based on various priorities that are set out. And as I said earlier, I actually think the case for physical activity in sport is a very strong one. I think by having public health more based in local authorities, you start making the other connections to transport and environment, which we find really difficult to make at the moment, to be perfectly honest. So we're actually quite excited and positive about how to make that case at a local level. But as we touched on before, it is about making the business case. People don't always automatically understand the huge benefits physical activity can bring. But so, you know, it will be down to local determination. It's down to the joint needs assessment that health and wellbeing boards will be making. So it's about influencing those decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can reflect feeling that locally in my own area. And certainly I think there's an open door. When I'm talking to public health colleagues at the moment, there's a clear, you know, concern about what's the picture out there across schools, the amount of fragmentation, the ability to connect with schools at the moment. So, you know, I think there's an open door to have that discussion. But as I said, what we need to do is make sure we get our messages together, get online with that. There was a gentleman just around here. Second question. Yeah.
Apologies for that. And Jeff's probably answered this to some degree. Obviously, there's the national child measurement data, and locally within Leicester City, that suggests that we have got an issue in terms of reception in year six in terms of healthy weight. So I don't want to keep harping on about this issue around whether there is a focus on pre-14-year-olds or not. But at the same time, there's data there that clearly evidence that we have got a particular issue with that age group. And I'd like to understand what Department of Health, Sport England are doing about obviously utilising that data to put in initiatives to target them.
Performance and information.
Well, I mean, obviously, we do use all the data we can from any of these programs to try and support local activity in terms of all the various programs. I mean, one of the other things that we did run for many years was the Healthy Schools program, which we funded for about 10 years. And what I'm sort of pleased to be able to say is, you know, we sort of pump primed it for that length of time. But what we're finding now is that actually there is still an awful lot of activity going on. And one of the things we encouraged Healthy Schools to do was to look at their key priorities. You know, what were the two biggest problems in their area, and to actually focus their attention specifically on those. That is very much drawing on the data that you've referred to.
And just to add to that, I think actually between Sport England and the Department of Health, we've actually been working really very closely around measurement. The department has been really helpful in terms of active people. I don't think there would have been a physical activity and sport indicator if active people and data sets like that didn't exist. That helps make the case for, you know, it's a big investment into active people, but it's 1% of the overall investment, and you need that planning information. So I think we are joined up. We certainly do look at those information. I guess the only thing I say is, you know, yes, a billion sounds like a lot of money, but we have to target it somewhere.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Paul. I'm going to draw those questions to a close now. Before I just give you some final remarks in going forward with the rest of the day, can you please sort of give your appreciation to the speakers this morning?
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.